It's the Scotty Myers Show.
Hey, welcome to this week's edition of the show. I'm your host, Scotty Myers. Thanks for tuning us in. Before we get into the geek news, we've lost quite a few notable names and people that have impacted many, many lives in the world of entertainment in the brief period of time that we've been in 2022. It hasn't been the best start to the year. Of course, Betty White, a trailblazer, a legend. There's really nothing that I can say about Betty White that hasn't been said 8 million times, and deservedly so. Like, I knew Betty White, but I didn't know all the ins and outs of her career. And, shame on me for not doing the research on it. But with her passing, I heard so many stories of some of the groundbreaking things she did, not just being a woman in comedy, but what she did for African-American entertainers when she had a show, when it was like, you know, kind of recommended, in quotes, that you don't have African-American entertainers on your show. She ignored those recommendations and went ahead with it anyway, which, you know, she was so kind of far ahead of her time and not worried, never worried about the backlash or what anybody else thought. And I think of all her gifts, that may have been her greatest, is just the, I don't give a fuck what anybody thinks about what I'm going to do, what I'm going to say, and inspiring on that level, and many others. So, of course, Betty White passed away. Shortly after Betty White, Bob Saget, who was a comedic legend and a guy that somehow had two careers because he was considered another one of America's dads. There's Bill Cosby, who nobody wants as their dad anymore, and then Bob Saget. And, you know, he had this clean-cut image on TV, and then even when he switched over to being like the host of America's Funniest Home Videos, it was cute dad jokes. But then if you ever went and saw Bob Saget live, Bob Saget was a filthy motherfucker in the funniest way. Like if you've never seen the movie The Aristocrats, Bob Saget's rendition of that joke is one of the best renditions on the entire film. Maybe second only to Gilbert Godfrey. And that's because Gilbert is depraved on a level that few people not serving jail time are. But Bob Saget was a legend, and it was shocking to see him pass. And then recently as well, within a day of each other, we had Meatloaf, who, you can say what you want about Meatloaf and some of the music he made and these grandiose rock operas. They weren't for everybody, but you couldn't deny the talent and the passion. You know, some of his songs I loved, some of them I was not a fan of. But as far as Meatloaf went, the person, unfortunately, I never got a chance to interview him. I would have loved to have interviewed him. Just from his diverse career, he probably had a ton of stories that he never told. And if I could have got one of those stories out of him, I would have been very happy. But he just seemed like a genuine dude. I saw him in concert once, and it was fantastic. Super high energy, very sweaty, but it was on a Super Bowl Sunday, and he kept in between songs getting updates on the game from his crew, which was hilarious to me. Like, it was, you know, it was just so funny. And because he's a football fan, but the show must go on. So he's trying to juggle both. And it never distracted from the show. It was really, really great to see that. And then another comedic icon, Louis Anderson, hosted Family Feud for a while. He was in Coming to America for not a lot of scenes, but man, he was good in the scenes he was in. Just a solid stand-up. Just a guy that was just funny. Effortlessly funny. Like if you watch Louis Anderson do stand up, there wasn't like a struggle to get to the joke. You know the comics I'm talking about. They might be funny and you might enjoy their work, but you can kind of see that we're treading down punchline lane while we're getting to the punchline. Louis Anderson wasn't like that. You know, his punchlines could kind of come out of nowhere because he just told the stories and the jokes so effortlessly. So those are massive, massive craters in the world of entertainment that are gone, and we're not even a month fully into this new year. So very rough and very heartbreaking for a lot of people, a lot of fans around the world, shocked and saddened by a lot of these deaths. So to Betty White, Bob Saget, Meatloaf, Louis Anderson, rest in peace. And if you're listening to the show and you're not familiar with some of their work, like maybe, you know what, maybe you never caught a Louis Anderson special, or maybe you never saw Bob Saget stand up, or, you know, you haven't seen Betty White do something in a while, or some of her older stuff, or you haven't listened to a Meatloaf tune. There's a ton of stuff on YouTube. Take a little bit of time. You're not going to regret it. And just kind of realize the level of talent that has left the planet. Let us move on to the geek news of the week. There was not a ton over the past little while, but definitely some that we should touch on. We'll start with Marvel. The big news out of the hosts of ideas is the Moon Knight trailer. We finally got a full-on look at Moon Knight, and I gotta say, it looks pretty sweet. It looks really, really good. I knew, based on the little bit of footage we saw, that it was going to look good, but I didn't think it was going to look this good, and it does look this good. It's sick. They touch on it right in the trailer that he has mental health issues, which has always been, to me, one of the huge attractions to Moon Knight, the way they handle mental health in the comic books, and I was glad to see it in the trailer. Now, I'm still hoping that it's part of the show, because just because it's in the trailer, it is something that they could touch on and then ignore. Marvel's done that before. If you go back to like Iron Man 2, they somewhat touch on Tony's alcoholism, which was a fantastic storyline in the comics, and then it just went away. They never brought it up again. There was, you know, they didn't go down that road. So I'm not convinced it's going to be as big a part of the story as it should be, and I hope it is. But at least it's being there in the trailer gives me a little bit more hope that it will be central. So many people were into the YouTube trailer that it set a record for YouTube, actually. Sorry, the trailer. Over 1 million views in 24 hours. That's a record for a Disney Plus Marvel show for trailers. So that's really good. And the trailer also gave us a little bit of insight into Ethan Hawke's character. Now, his name is Arthur Harrow, which that name is from Marvel. But it was only like one or two issues, I mean, that character appeared in. But based on what we're seeing in the trailer, I think they're using that name, Arthur Harrow, and turning it, maybe it's an alias or something like that, into the Sun King. Because it does look like he's leading a cult and that, so that would make sense. And then you get that, you know, the play off each other with names, right? Sun King, Moon Knight. That type of thing. So, but Moon Knight looks fantastic. That's really the only big news out of Marvel this week. In all honesty, it's been quiet over in the Marvel camp. Over to Star Wars. It's also been a little quiet as Book of Boba Fett continues, and we'll talk about that in a second. But we did get some casting news out of Ahsoka. And they have cast someone that I am a huge fan of. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is joining Ahsoka. She is fantastic. I love her work. She was great as Huntress in Birds of Prey. We don't know who she's playing yet, though. So that's the interesting thing. There's a couple of possibilities here that popped into my head right away. One could be Hera from Rebels, the pilot. You know, we know, obviously, Ahsoka knows Hera. They're going to have some other Rebels characters showing up. Presumably the whole focus of the show is to find Ezra Bridger, so it would make sense to have her play, you know, another Rebels character live action. Another one that could work, although timeline wise I'm not sure, I don't know exactly where this would fall, if it would fit, but Dr. Aphra could be another possibility for Mary Elizabeth Winstead. And there's more, but those were the two that jumped into my head kind of immediately, was those two roles. So we'll see if I'm right, or if it's one that it could be a character we've never met before too, but obviously you kind of want to guess at characters you know first. On to Boba Fett. I keep seeing people online ripping the show, and I don't know, maybe I'm definitely in the minority on this one, but I love this show. We're four episodes in. That's my only concern, is that we're four episodes in and it's only like seven or eight episodes. But it is still slow. It is that slow burn story that, again, I said this before, if you're watching it through the lens of a crime story, like a gangster story, then all these moves make sense, right? It's basically a very long, drawn-out chess game right now between Boba Fett and his enemies and allies. And yeah, sometimes that doesn't make the most exciting television. You want, you know, Boba Fett blowing shit up. I get that. He did a little bit of that in the last episode. Episode 4. He definitely, you know, once he got his ship back, which was a whole other conversation, he did some Boba Fett-y, stereotypical, what you expect Boba Fett to do type stuff. And then the big thing at the end of the last episode was they're talking about getting some muscle and some music played, and it was the Mandalorian's music. So I don't know if episode 5 we're going to get the Mando showing up, but I think once we get into these last 2-3 episodes, we're definitely going to see the action ramp up, the story ramp up, and the violence ramp up, if that's what you're looking for. And listen, as much as I love the show, and I do, and Boba Fett is one of my favorite Star Wars characters, as he is for a lot of people, I'm enjoying this different take on him. It's an older Boba Fett that's been through some shit. So just because he's not walking into the cantina and shooting everybody, I mean, that was never the character anyway. He was a bounty hunter, right? He was paid for his work. He didn't just randomly go around taking care of people. So if you're a bounty hunter without a bounty that you're going after, and you're trying to organize and take over a crime family, there's not necessarily going to be that much just killing folks. It's coming because we know who his enemies are now, but I'm enjoying Boba Fett. I could take a little bit more Boba Fett action, but I hope we'll be rewarded in the end because I like the story so far. Switching over to DC, a little bit more in DC right now, as the length of the Batman has been revealed and people were surprised that it was long. And I wasn't. I was like, you know, Batman, Bruce Wayne's supposed to be the ultimate male, so I assumed he was packing. Now, they're actually talking about the length of the movie. It's just under 3 hours, including credits, and people are freaking out that it's too long. It is long, but I don't think it's too long. If the movie is good and it advances nicely, you know, no one cares about the time. Avengers Endgame was in the same ballpark for length, and nobody complained about that. Watchmen was pretty close to 3 hours. And then, of course, if you watch Zack Snyder's Justice League in one sitting, that was almost 4 hours. So, and all of those other ones I enjoyed. You know, I was never like, oh, when's this fucking thing going to be over? So as long as it's good, which all indications appear to be that the Batman is very good, I don't think the length is an issue. I think people are just trying to, you know, find something to complain about with the Batman, because honestly, in everything we have seen and heard, there hasn't been much to complain about. Spinning off, not from the Batman, but staying in the Bat family, Batgirl, we got the first look at her costume, and it is banging. I love it. It is straight out of the Burnside run of the DC Comics, and some people were shitting on it because it is a homemade costume, which it was in the comics. It's also been said that it's not her only suit in the movie, that this is the one that she wears when she starts fighting crime, and by the end of the film, she might have a new suit, which would make sense once Batman gets involved, Michael Keaton's Batman. There's also been a ton of behind-the-scenes footage. We've got to see Brendan Fraser in action a little bit. It definitely looks like he's Firefly. It hasn't been confirmed, but that was the heavy rumor. And now with the amount of fire trucks and fires and everything, he's Firefly. he's Firefly. Don't worry about it. Really looking forward to Batgirl. And I'm going to say it every time until either they change it or they release it. I still think Warner Brothers /DC is making a mistake not putting this movie in theaters. The set photos look too good. The costumes look too good. You got Michael Keaton as Batman in there now. Batgirl is big enough, I think, to send her to the box office and not leave her on HBO Max. It's my opinion. I will probably keep harping on that opinion. I did the same thing with Blue Beetle, and I was right. They moved it to the theater. And I just think Batgirl, I'm getting the impression it probably should do that. Just, again, just my take. The Flash movie is getting some comic book tie-ins to lead up to the Flash movie. I don't know. I'm hoping that they're not going to be required reading, just because the average fan won't read them. And the biggest thing that any comic book movie always has to overcome is, how are you relatable to the casual fan? And it's sometimes my only fear with these shared universes, right? Like, I'll never, ever, ever forget my wife's reaction to the end of Solo. When, spoilers, but if you haven't seen Solo by now, you're not going to. When Darth Maul appeared at the end of Solo, my wife was lost because she didn't watch any of the animated shows. So she didn't know Maul was alive. So she felt very left out and very lost. And my only fear with all the shared universe TV shows, movies, intertwining comic books, is that, you know, it's really hard for somebody to read them all that is a fan, or pay attention to them all that is a fan. Take somebody that is a passing fan. It's like, oh yeah, I like Batman. I like, you know, Spider-Man. I like Star Wars. But they're not diehards. You don't want to alienate them. So I'm hoping the Flash movie comic tie-ins are not required reading before we get to see the film. Now, one of the huge controversies that has been in the world of DC was Joss Whedon. And the stories came out about his mistreatment of the cast and crew on the set of Justice League when he came in to do some reshoots and ended up reshooting a good chunk of the film. Something like 80% of the movie that ended up in theaters was Joss Whedon's Justice League, or Justice League, as some people have called it. Obviously, Ray Fisher came out, rightfully so, and got an investigation rolling. Gal Gadot backed him up. People that have worked with Joss Whedon previously, like Sarah Michelle Gellar, made statements. And Joss never said a thing, which was probably the right thing to do. Because when you're an asshat, the worst thing you can do is open your mouth. So there's been time. Somebody could have coached him on this, which is what makes what he did even more egregious. And I'm not saying that having someone coach you to say the right thing is good, but at least it makes you look a little bit better than this. So Joss Whedon comes out and tries to do what a husband does when he's been caught, you know, not cleaning up the house or something. He tries to reverse the heat, throw it back on the wife so that, you know, they talk about something else. Joss Whedon tried to reverse the heat. He tried to throw all the heat on Ray Fisher, told Ray Fisher he was a terrible actor, is what he said. And that's why he cut out so much of Cyborg out of the Justice League film, was because, oh, he was just so bad, we couldn't even use it. And then why Gal Gadot had issues with him? Oh, because she can't speak English. She doesn't understand English. I've seen many an interview with Gal Gadot. She speaks English perfectly fine, and she seems to understand everybody's questions perfectly fine. So I don't think her English comprehension is an issue. So he basically came out and blamed everybody else for the reason that he is a dickhead. It was shocking to me, absolutely shocking to me, that this was the stance he took after having all this time to step back, watch what happened, watched Warner Brothers not react the way they should have. I still think Warner Brothers' reaction should have been a bit more firm. They were a little wishy-washy in their response, and that's putting it nicely. But after seeing all that, to try to roll it back and push it on other people, man, really, Joss Whedon, just go away at this point. We don't need you. Everybody's fine without you. Better movies have been made with the same characters with you not involved. So yeah, just go. I can't say too much more without potentially getting into a lawsuit, like threatening the man or something like that, 'cause it's just stupid. Just fucking stupid. On to something much better and more lighthearted and way more entertaining than fucking Joss Whedon. Peacemaker. My God. I cannot say enough great things about Peacemaker. We're you know, 4 episodes in, because they released the first 3 right away. And I always get leery when I hear reviews saying this is the best thing that DC has ever done. This is the best thing that Marvel has ever done. Because I'm like, I don't know. They've done some pretty fucking good shit. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I've enjoyed that they have done. So I was that made me a little bit hesitant. And I just got to say, Peacemaker is brilliant. As great as James Gunn is, and his body of work kind of speaks for that, whether it's Guardians or the Suicide Squad or anything that he's done, it's always been good. This so far is his crowning achievement. There's very few things, I think, that even come close to Peacemaker. The only sad part is that it's R-rated. So, you know, there's a bunch of people that probably can't see how great Peacemaker is, which is a bit of a bummer. But my God, the show is written so well. Every episode seems to have the perfect amount of action, character interaction, which is funny, and heart. And that's the biggest thing. It was one of the biggest takeaways I got from the Suicide Squad. He did it with Guardians as well. That's why those characters connected. Because if we're going to be totally honest about some of the characters in Guardians of the Galaxy, or some of the characters that he chose to use in the Suicide Squad, they're not super popular characters. And the reason is because the way they were written previously in comic books is they didn't really connect with people, right? What Gunn has done is he's come in and taken these obscure characters and fleshed out their stories a bit more. Some of them he's definitely changed. Some of them he hasn't, though. He's just kind of made that story more prevalent and put it more out front so that people go, oh, shit, I didn't know that about that guy. Now that's interesting. And doing what he's done with Peacemaker, phenomenal. Like, really, really great stuff. I don't want to ruin anything from it, to be honest. But I will say that the ending of Suicide Squad plays heavily into Peacemaker's state of mind now. And it's interesting to watch that dynamic. I can't wait to see where Peacemaker goes. He drops a shit ton of cool DC references in there, like Batmite. Batmite is now canon in the DC cinematic universe, whatever they're calling it. Matter Eater Lad, Doll Man, like just the most obscure character references, which just make me chuckle when I hear them, being such a hardcore fan. And then as a fan of 80s hair metal, the soundtrack is kick-ass as well. I mean, the last episode, you know, had Pretty Boy Floyd and Faster Pussycat on it. It's like James Gunn broke into my teenage tape deck collection and was just like, here, this is what you want to hear, right? And it's like, fucking right, I do. So yeah, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant show. I honestly can't say enough kudos to James Gunn, and John Cena's phenomenal on the show. Everybody is. The whole cast is really great. Eagly will steal your heart. It's just, again, if you're not watching Peacemaker, you're doing yourself a disservice. And if you're not watching Peacemaker because, you don't like John Cena, you don't know anything about Peacemaker, the helmet is stupid looking. Whatever your reason is for not watching Peacemaker, get over it. Because I think my wife has zero frame of reference for Peacemaker. She didn't see the Suicide Squad, she doesn't know. And when the show came on, the first couple episodes were released on my birthday. So I used that as my trump card to be like, hey, let me watch Peacemaker. And she sat in the room with me. And then when the new episode came out, I was like, oh, a new Peacemaker episode. She was like, yeah, you can put that on. Even she's digging it. And that says a lot to me. So again, thank you, James Gunn and cast and crew and everybody involved. That will do it for this week's edition of the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget, tell your friends, share the word. I know I keep talking about changes to the show, and I think they are going to come. I'm just trying to wrap my head around how to do them effectively. So give me a little bit more time on that. But again, I will let you know once I figure out how to get that ball rolling and the changes that I want to make. I'll let you know what they are and everything that goes along with it. So don't forget, follow along The Scotty Myers Show on Facebook and Instagram, at Scotty Myers on Twitter. And until we chat again, have a great week.